You aren't going to believe this, but you have the great misfortune this morning just to have me. My brother is off on a covert operation. Dun, dun, dun. I can tell you, but then I'd have to kill you, and that really would bum out everybody here at EAA. So anyway, we in the studio with us today, we have Susan Bell, courtesy of NASA.
Thank you so much for having me here this morning.
I'll tell you what, we have had so many visits from NASA, we're becoming a part of the operation.
We're going to officially, you know, get you in here. We'll give you some badges and, you know, NASA meatballs to put on your shirt.
Hey, that'd be great. Can do you have a rocket you can spare, too? I mean, you know, we love
those
things.
I'll work on it. Okay. I'll put in a request.
There we go. And you're with NASA Airborne Science. This is rather interesting. And also, you happen to be an aerobatic pilot as well.
I am. So first, we'll go with the airborne science first, since that's my day job. So NASA's airborne science program is part of our Earth science, overall Earth science program, where we actually use all different types of aircraft, ranging from the DC-8 to the civilian version of the U-2 that we call an ER-2, to both test instruments and look at regional concerns on Earth from aircraft. And
wow.
It's a super awesome thing that we do at NASA that no one knows about, so now you know about it.
And now EAA and the rest of the world knows about it. But a DC-8?
Yes.
Where did you find that?
It's an old airliner that NASA purchased. We put new, you know, turbofan engines on it, and it flies all over the world. It can hold up to 40 scientists with their instruments, and we take out the windows. Put probes out the windows all along its wings, and it looks like a giant flying porcupine when it goes off on a mission, which it just did this week. It is actually heading to Boise, Idaho, to the National Interagency Fire Center for a NASA NOAA mission called FireX AQ that will be chasing wildfires in the western United States to look at the smoke and how it's influencing air quality up there. And then it's going to go to Kansas later on this summer and look at agricultural fires in the southeast.
Sounds like they're a very busy schedule there. You know, that's the one thing that I've never really thought about is the after effects of, say, a brush fire, like the wildfires they had in California a bunch of years ago. I mean, there was a tremendous amount of smoke that came off of it. And some of the satellite pictures, I'm looking at that going, oh, whoa, that's not cool.
Yes, so I'm from California, the Jet Propulsion Lab down in Pasadena.
Good old JPL.
JPL, it's an awesome place. But the wildfire smoke, when it does get into our communities, it is very dense at times. They actually sometimes have air quality almost emergency days where people have to wear masks.
Ooh.
So this mission is going to be looking both at the you know, the effects of air quality on human health as well as visibility. So my aerobatic side, I actually flew up to a contest from California to Cutbank, Montana last year during some of those horrible wildfires in the area. And you could hardly hold a heading because you couldn't see any visual references on the horizon because the smoke was so dense. I was about 12,000 or so.
So you were basically IFR at the time.
Yeah, it wasn't, you could see down, so it wasn't like dangerous, but it was like you could not see. You know, I fly an extra 300 that's stripped pretty much, and it doesn't have, you know, a heading indicator or anything. And you would just be flying, and you'd suddenly be 10 degrees off heading.
Ooh.
So that mission's going to be helping look at some of this, and also how that smoke and all the particles that burn and go up in the atmosphere affect weather and, you know, eventually our climate.
Yeah. Oh, you know, that was another question that I was wondering about. Commercial airliners. They're buzzing along, and they're going through this smoke. Now, I know that volcanic ash is very bad for jet engines. Is NASA exploring, you know, what goes on in a jet engine when it starts sucking up the smoke from all these wildfires?
You know, I'm actually, this mission is, that's not it. It's a little bit lower down in the atmosphere, but we are also, besides the DC-8, we'll be flying our ER-2, which, again, the civilian version of the U-2. So it flies at above 60,000 feet. And so we'll actually be looking down at the upper part of the atmosphere where the jet airliners are. So then maybe there could be some results from that.
So you're going to be actually doing these surveys in kind of like layers.
They're in layers. Most of our airborne science, we have multiple planes. We'll be doing layered type surveys. This mission actually has some people on the ground in, you know, like vans that will drive around to the wildfires on the ground. and actually do sampling at the ground level as well.
So there's a whole lot of technology and science going on. Are those trucks linked to, say, an overhead, you know, your DC-8 flying overhead?
No, they collect it. This mission isn't necessarily to provide fire response at the moment. It's to actually study the effects. So they're going to take all those different layers of data that we get, put it together, and then start developing, you know, an understanding of what is going on with the air quality.
So in other words, this is a project that goes on after the fire is out. It's not directly assisting the firefighters during the blaze.
Not yet. We do have some other missions that actually, there's a radar mission called UAVSAR that flies on a Gulfstream. It has a large radar pod underneath it. Sometimes we've actually sent it out to help map the fire lines. And that can both help the firefighters, but it also helps in the recovery efforts because we know where the extent of the fire. So we can both understand how far the fire went, but also look at, say, potential landslides and mudslides when the winter rains come in the western U.S.
Yeah, that's another after effect of a major fire, and California did have problems with that. Are you using any drones for, say, lower altitude research?
Yes, there are some drones actually in that FireX AQ mission as well.
Are they big or little ones?
They're bigger ones. They're not the quadcopters. They're larger ones. But NASA does have some drones. But we tend to do larger aircraft mainly because we're testing instruments often that will eventually go to space. So they're actually quite large and heavy at times and don't quite have the capability to fly on the smaller drones.
Now, I'm assuming that if you're going to do these aerial survey missions with all this instrumentation, that you happen to have one wild instrument design department.
Oh, well, they come from all the centers all over NASA. And from the JPL, where I work, we actually do a lot of the instrument design. And so that's why I'm so involved with these projects. Also, being a pilot, I love that we're using airplanes to do really cool science to help people's lives. For example, besides the fire missions, we actually have a huge emphasis on ice. Because with the warming of the Earth, we're actually seeing a lot of ice melt. So there's a great mission. It's called OMG. It's funny.
Oh, jeez.
And it's oceans melting Greenland. And we actually fly the radar up there to map some of the glaciers every year. There's 27,000 miles of coastline, and we fly all of that, mapping glaciers. And then we actually rented this past year, it changes what aircraft, but from Basler Flight Service here at Oshkosh, a DC-3 to drop probes out into the water to actually test the temperature and saltiness of the water to understand how warm water can melt the ice from below in the ocean.
So you're doing not only aerial surveys, but you're doing oceanographic as well, on a limited degree.
Yes. Yeah. Well, yep. We basically cover the entire planet. We have other missions specifically looking at, say, ozone in the Long Island area in preparation for a future satellite that will look at air quality in large cities. It's called TEMPO. You know, to other missions that can go out and respond to disasters. We actually flew radar mission over the Carolinas after Hurricane Florence to actually help first responders on the ground. And that, of course, that radar is in development for a future satellite mission. And why we actually have the airborne program, again, most of this technology eventually ends in space. So we can then develop it here and test it and actually help people with the airborne science. But our ultimate goal, being NASA, is to get into space and then be able to help people with that technology all around the world.
I always figured that once the shuttle program was shut down, that NASA was fading off into the distance. I couldn't have been more wrong.
Oh, no.
You guys are busy.
We are.
And you're innovating. It must be exciting times with all the instrumentation, earth science stuff that you're using and doing. It's got to be great fun to go to work.
Oh, I think it is fun. It's fun to go to work. I actually fly on a mission that studies snowpack in the western United States. And so we actually measure that snow, how deep it is, how bright it is. And then we can actually give that information to water managers so people have water to drink in the summer.
And not only that, but you managed to stop at some of these places and take in a little skiing yourself,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, you know, there are some off days, you know. You get some IFR conditions, we can't fly.
Well, you know, you got to have a day off once in a while.
Yeah.
You just can't fly the airplane all day.
Yeah.
So you're also an aerobatic pilot. You said you're flying an extra 300.
Yes.
Are you competing in it by any chance?
Oh, I am competing. I am a member of the International Aerobatic Club, which is, of course, part of the EAA. And I I have an extra 300, and last year I actually won the U.S. National Sportsman Championship.
Nice.
So, after there were 19 people in my category, so I worked really, really hard to do that. And it was actually our national championships were held here at Oshkosh in September last year, so I actually got to go compete over the runways here at Oshkosh, which was pretty cool.
That must be fun, looking down at those beautiful dots lining up everything. It's got to be a great visual aid.
Yeah, it's a super challenging sport, but it's extremely fun. So if you're bored with straight and level, head over to the IAC building, sign up, and learn more about aerobatics.
Absolutely. You'll be a better pilot for it, too.
Oh, you will.
You'll learn how to use that little waggly thing on the back of the tail of the airplane. They call it a rudder.
That rudder.
I know I've fought with quite a few of them myself at times. But why did you get into aerobatics?
When I moved to JPL to work there, I was flying over LA a lot, and I kind of did all the LA, fly to Catalina, fly to Big Bear kind of stuff. And I took my vacation time and went and did the emergency maneuver training program at CP Aviation that Rich Stoll developed. Fell in love with spinning. I just loved it. So I know most people are terrified. I loved it. And anyway, that's basically how I got into it, and then just kind of took off into competition.
That's wonderful. Well, you know, Susan, we wish you all the best with your aerobatic endeavors, and also, of course, keep the NASA science going.
Oh, we will.
Make sure that, we figure out everything that we need to figure out.
We're trying.
So we're talking to Susan Bell from NASA Airborne Science. I'm Fast Eddie, flying solo because nobody else wants to be here with me, and this is EAA Radio.